We're talking about the latest COVID news, including Milwaukee lifting its mask mandate, vaccination rates, new naming conventions for COVID variants, and more. You are part of this conversation. Call now at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have? Now that masks aren't required in most places, will you continue to wear yours even if you're vaccinated? Does it worry you that the U.S. probably won't reach herd immunity? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Ajay Sethi is an associate professor of population health sciences and director of the Master of Public Health program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's an infectious disease epidemiologist. Ajay, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Keely.
We know the city of Milwaukee's mask mandate ends today. Really following the rest of Wisconsin and most of the states in the country, where is Wisconsin in terms of vaccination and case numbers? Because the CDC guidance tells us that people who are vaccinated are no longer necessarily wearing masks.
Yeah, a lot of people in Wisconsin have been vaccinated or have chosen to do so. We still have work to do, but a lot of people have been vaccinated and case rates have been coming down, and we're at levels really that are sort of at the very early parts of our pandemic with our 7-day average of below 200 now.
Help us understand, what does that mean and what can that tell us about the safety of shedding those masks at this point?
Well, people who are unvaccinated should continue to wear masks because the virus is still circulating and the rates in unvaccinated individuals is very high. The reason why we're doing well as a state is because so many people have chosen vaccination and we're seeing less spread. But as long as unvaccinated people gather with each other and somebody may be infected, we have a chance of continued outbreaks.
One of the milestones we've reached this month is that COVID hospitalizations are the lowest in Wisconsin that they've ever been since the state started tracking that in April of last year. What can that tell us about how the virus is spreading or how it's affecting people?
Yeah, so the hospitalization data is really good news. Ever since the beginning of this pandemic, preserving our healthcare systems and making sure the most vulnerable in our society are not, you know, coming down with severe COVID and maybe even worse outcomes than that has been really important. And when we look at vaccination rates across the state, we see trends by age indicating that people who see themselves as vulnerable for severe COVID have chosen vaccination, and people in younger ages too, because they understand that they're part of the chain of transmission. For that reason, hospitalizations come down. We've also know that mitigation is continuing. Even though mask mandates are being lifted and precautions are being relaxed, a lot of people still, you know, aren't attending gatherings, still wear their masks when they need to, and keep their distance as indicated. All of that contributes to cases coming down. And when hospitalizations come down, that's great news.
And the CDC, even in saying that vaccinated adults don't have to wear masks all the time, they did say you should continue to wear masks in certain circumstances. And that includes hospitals and schools.
That's right. I mean, in hospitals in general, we should always be cautious because hospitals can often be the source of different infectious agents. So wearing a mask in those settings is a good idea. In schools, especially where kids are not even eligible to be vaccinated, we should really still be wearing masks in order to keep transmission down. And also for travel, it's important that people wear masks during travel, and the airlines are certainly requiring it.
And why is it important in travel, but not, say, necessarily at your local grocery store?
Yeah, I mean, so businesses are deciding whether or not they want to maintain a mask mandate. And so some of the reasons are for that reason alone. Some grocery stores may still be requiring masks. But certainly when you're thinking about a local grocery store, the local epidemiology and the case rates will decide whether people feel like a mask mandate is necessary. And obviously they're being relaxed. When it comes to travel, this is the way most infections spread around the country, within the country, around the world. And because of variants that are around the world, we do want to make sure that we're not unnecessarily stirring the pot, because we know that COVID is still quite epidemic in many parts of the country, or some counties in the country and parts of the world.
We're talking about what we know and what we don't know about this stage of the global health crisis. Our guest is UW-Madison epidemiologist Ajay Sethi. You can join this conversation. Ask your question at 1-800-642-1234. What are you wondering about the state of the pandemic? Now that kids 12 and older are eligible for vaccination, will your children be getting the COVID vaccine? Maybe you've opted out of vaccination right now. Are you still wearing your mask? And how are you helping to pull us out of this pandemic? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Ajay, 16 states, including Wisconsin, have vaccinated their incarcerated population at higher rates than their general population. That's from the COVID Prison Project, and that's based on the 27 states that reported their data. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, congregate living facilities everywhere, you know, have been the sites of major outbreaks for COVID, and where many cases have occurred, hospitalizations and deaths. And prisons are included in that. So I would hope that those populations are receiving the vaccine at higher rates because the epidemic has been so concentrated in facilities like that, places like that, nursing homes as well. And that's why we would also want to see very high rates of vaccine uptake in anybody and living in a nursing home or any congregate living facility.
Well, speaking of vaccinations, because children age 12 and up are now eligible to get COVID vaccines, how much of an effect could that have on the spread of the virus?
Greatly. Right now, people who are unvaccinated are just not representative of people who are vaccinated, particularly by age. Now that the eligibility has come down to 12, that helps a lot. In the fall, when children as young as 2 are eligible for the vaccine, that's going to help even more. As the more people who get vaccinated, the better it is for reducing transmission in all of our communities. Of course, children have to become vaccinated, and that's the decision of parents talking to their children about getting vaccinated, and hopefully more will choose to do so.
Well, that brings us to this concept of herd immunity. I mean, last month, we heard experts say herd immunity against COVID-19 is not going to be possible in the U.S. With this addition that, like, that might be okay, will you put that into context for us? What are we talking about now when it comes to herd immunity?
Yeah, so when we think about herd immunity, we're talking about a state in our society where we don't see widespread outbreaks or really any outbreaks at all. That's something that's in the distant future. Between now and then, we can certainly begin to return to normal and feel safer the lower our case rates are, which is going to be a direct result of more people choosing vaccination. We're seeing that now, and we still have progress to make, and that can be done. When we have very few cases being transmitted and case rates are very low, we can just feel as a society that we're in a better place. We may not be able to call that herd immunity because the virus continues to transmit, but we can achieve a milestone of exceptional control in Wisconsin, which is still very important.
What about the messaging when it comes to vaccination? Because we, in the beginning, heard a lot of conversation about how immunization isn't just about you. Yes, it protects you, but this is about your community. And if we don't feel like we're going to get a full grip on this, and we're still going to see COVID-19 around, how do we encourage people to follow the science and get vaccines when it seems more selfish?
Well, I mean, people have to choose vaccination. People deserve their autonomy in making that decision. Of course, there's a conversation about mandated vaccines, and that's also something that may come up. It certainly comes up in certain settings, some college campuses, maybe some workplaces will choose to do that. But for right now, the decision to get the vaccine is an individual one, largely. And if people see the vaccine as something that can give them a lot of confidence that they can avoid some of the worst outcomes of COVID, hopefully they can choose to get vaccinated. There are delays in when how long it takes for someone to make that decision, and that's okay. We don't expect everybody to be on board in, very quickly, but over time, hopefully, we can chip away at that, and more people will choose to get the vaccine.
We're talking with Ajay Sethi, who stays with us. He's an associate professor of population health sciences, and he's the director of the Master of Public Health program at the UW-Madison. We're talking all things COVID-19, and there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know from an epidemiologist about the future of the pandemic, variants of the coronavirus, or vaccinations? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. From herd immunity to vaccine hesitancy to inoculation rates and mask mandates, this conversation is rooted in what you need to know right now in this pandemic. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is UW-Madison epidemiologist Ajay Sethi. We're looking at the latest COVID news, and we're taking your questions at 800-642-1234. We've got Marcus in Madison ready to join this conversation. Hi, Marcus.
Good afternoon, Professor Sethi. Perhaps you could tell me why I rarely hear anything about the current numbers from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of the CDC, which is government-funded. Just looking at it, it says that there are now 4,406 deaths and 21,537 adverse events, an increase of 205 deaths since last week, and over 3,000 increase since last week. I'm wondering why this is never brought up in these discussions.
Yeah, Marcus, thanks for that question. And I know we talk about adverse reactions as we discuss the vaccine, but also Marcus is throwing out lots of numbers, and I want to make sure that, Ajay, you're able to put those numbers into context for us and help us understand what that adverse events reporting system is.
Yeah, so that system is in place as sort of a catch-all for people who have been vaccinated to be able to report by themselves, for themselves, and through their providers anything that they may think could be related to the vaccine. It doesn't mean that it necessarily is related to the vaccine, but we won't know until we at least get some information or data. So the system's in place really as just sort of a broad way of collecting information. It then goes through a process in which it's vetted and examined for not even just quality of information, but to also see whether it's leading us to think that there could be an adverse event. It's an important system, but it's something that requires a lot, many more steps afterwards to determine validity of claims. And so we will hear something when something from the VAERS system alerts us to side effects that warrant, a public announcement. Until then, some of the rates of, for example, deaths may be very similar to the rate of death in people who are unvaccinated. So there isn't any cause for alarm. But the CDC certainly monitors that along with the FDA, and it's an important system.
So it's a reporting system. Those numbers are not necessarily linked to the virus. They're things that people that have come up in people's lives that they think may be linked to the vaccine?
Yeah, that's right. It's based on reporting from providers and sort of self-reports. It's not based on research or based on something that's systematic. It's really a catch-all system. But it's important because it can alert you to something that may be important for announcing a safety issue to the public. And there are processes in place. If something is not being announced, it's because there isn't anything to be concerned about at the moment.
Well, we saw some of that with the pause in the Johnson & Johnson or the Janssen COVID-19 vaccine when we saw some adverse reactions come up. They paused it so that they could work through the science, and then the science validated that the J&J vaccine was safe. Is that how it's supposed to work?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so when there is reason for concern, a pause may be required to get more information as well as it be an opportunity to talk to providers across the country to alert them of something like blood clots that came up with the J&J vaccine. And after a systematic review, in that case, the vaccine, using the vaccine again, you know, it was resumed because it didn't warrant taking that vaccine off the market. So the systems, it's a good system, but it's often sort of overinterpreted, and it's better to let the FDA and the CDC experts decide what deserves our attention.
Marcus, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Ajay Sethi, who's a UW-Madison epidemiologist. We're getting the latest on crucial information to have at this stage of the coronavirus pandemic, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Anne is in Door County and wants to join the conversation. Good afternoon, Anne.
Hi, this is Anne. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I'm wondering. I'm fully vaccinated. I am 65, and I am to have overnight weekend, extended weekend guests who are not vaccinated. And I'm wondering about the precautions or wisdom of having people in my home, especially as I am also dealing with and taking care of my 91-year-old parents frequently. That's my question.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing this up, because as some people choose not to get the vaccine, families are in this situation, or friends are in this situation of having to figure out what's safe and what isn't. Ajay, what are the risks here?
I mean, so I don't know if Anne's 91-year-old parents are vaccinated. I'm going to presume that they are. Anybody who is vaccinated can feel very confident that they're not going to have severe COVID if they were to become infected. And the likelihood of becoming infected is also very low. And if they were infected, it's not likely that they're going to transmit to others. The guests who are unvaccinated, since they're few in number, if it's 100 people visiting your house, all unvaccinated, I'd be concerned. If it's a few people, I would be less concerned, especially if community rates for COVID are very low. You can always ask guests to seek a COVID test before coming to your home if that made you comfortable. You can always ask guests to wear a mask if that made you feel comfortable as well. And just have that conversation about how best to lower risk for everybody. But right now, the gathering of people who are vaccinated, unvaccinated can be done safely simply because community transmission is on the low end.
Anne talked about her parents in her 90s. The flip side to that is that children under 12 cannot be vaccinated. So what if she were in the position of having children who were unable to be vaccinated around people who are not vaccinated? Would your recommendation change at all?
Yeah, I mean, in general, when you have a lot of people who are unvaccinated together, you'd be concerned about any spread from person to person among those people who are unvaccinated. The fewer, the better. Gathering is also important for our mental health. That's something we haven't been doing a lot of in 2020, and to be able to do that now is important. But you got to think about the safety and just make sure that if we can test people, it's nice to do that. They're still available, even though they're not in high demand today as they were months ago. I think those gatherings can still occur. And wearing masks is important when you're mixing people across multiple households that are unvaccinated.
I want to touch on another finding, and that's that COVID vaccinations are free in the United States. It's illegal to charge for them. And yet a Kaiser Family Foundation poll found a third of vaccinated adults aren't sure whether they need to pay for the shot or if insurance will cover it, or anything like that. I mean, what's behind the misunderstanding here, and what should public health officials do about it?
Yeah, you know, we have a healthcare system in the United States that's not very simple to navigate. And it stresses people out. It stresses me out every time I have to navigate the healthcare system. And sometimes you get surprise bills for things you didn't think you would. And all of that gets conflated with our government-funded public health campaign to vaccinate people, which is entirely free for everyone. But because health systems are part of the community of vaccinators, I think people get confused in thinking that they might get a bill when really they won't. And if they are, they shouldn't be. And that's just important that sort of anomalies should not be considered sort of the norm. Vaccine's free for everybody, and you shouldn't expect to be charged for it.
What else should people know right now that either we've heard a bit of and we're not talking about enough, or that's something new that we should be thinking about at this stage of the pandemic?
Well, at this stage, we should feel optimistic about our future, but we should recognize that there are a lot of people who are still unvaccinated. And I hope those individuals will choose to get vaccinated in the near future. You know, in the summer, we can enjoy some much needed sort of more relaxation and feeling like things are returning to normal. But come fall, as our activities move back indoor and respiratory viruses in general sort of increase in their spread at those times, we should expect the same thing for COVID unless we can get more people vaccinated. And hopefully that'll be the case. But otherwise, we can expect sort of a return to more spread in the fall months.
So you anticipate we'll see less this summer, but that we could absolutely see a rebound of coronavirus infections in the fall?
We certainly could if we don't have enough people vaccinated. There's a lot of time between now and then, and mm-hmm. that's why we should encourage vaccination for anybody who hasn't chosen that already.
Ajay, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Keely.
Ajay Sethi is an associate professor of population health sciences, and he's director of the Master of Public Health program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. We've been talking about what we need to know at this stage of the pandemic.